Now, this poem is one that is over in the Lumberman's Museum in Patton, and it does commemorate an actual event.
That's right.
That was quite a...
My father wrote this poem. Named it the Penobscot Lumber Woods. On December the 27th, 1888, I hired to work in the lumber woods on Penobscot's East Branch, Grand Lake. I hired with Warren Leslie in Patton's booming town to chop spruce logs on Old Traveler, and we brought them to the ground. There was little Billy Kennedy, Gus Fish and Avon Drew, Charles Craig, Hamp Stockford, and myself formed part of that jolly crew. We started out from Patton as happy as could be. We journeyed to the Crummett Farm and had our noonday tea. That night we came to Sabour's Farm, that mansion in the woods. Our host was Ira Cooper, and his beans and bread were good. The next morning we went to Knobs, where we had to cross the lake. In crossing Old Penobscot Grand, our horses met their fate. In crossing Old Penobscot Lake, the ice broke straight and true, taking with it horses, sleds, and grain. We never found trace or shoe. We then did form a human chain, the teamster's life to save. Nearly hidden by fir and pine, through the log camps and hollows, which we reached in 10 minutes' time. With a hearty welcome that we received at the camps above the dam, where we met our boss, Joe Mitchell, a good, kind-hearted man. Our cookie was a gentleman, Dave Downing was his name. It's hard to beat old Dave in the cooking of different things. Our food was always extra good. All a man might wish. The custom was on Friday nights to have us all cut. Started up Old Traveler, a log cut and haul. Boys, you could have been there and see those big trees fall. Those trees would jump full 20 feet downhill in the second time. We had to tie ropes around our shoes, so steep they were flying. Joe Mitchell was our camp boss, and a gentleman was he. Oftentimes he'd come up in the woods and help me cut a tree. He taught me how to steer those trees, and he showed me how to chop. And when old Joe would swing his axe, I'll tell you something to pop. It was the custom those days in the lumber woods to have plenty of fish and wild game. Sighting up his old rifle, Columbus Coleman won his fame. His bullets brought down deer and moose, several partridges and black bear. Before his pastime, he would hunt the wolves that wandered there. Bert Ham was our landing man. With him we had lots of fun. He would say, when we come in at night, did you bring me any gum? On the landing, he never found a fault. He marked his logs all right. He rolled them where he wanted them and never had a fight. On the 26th of April, 1889, we boomed our logs and broke our camp. Started out on time. We started out next morning for Patton. We were bound, and when we reached the clearing, we reached it on bare ground.
Oh, that is good, and it's so good to have an original one.
The boys of this crew are scattered now. Some are dead and gone. Few of them are still alive to witness this crude song. I'll tell whoever reads this verse that these few lines are true, for I myself was one of the men who formed that jolly crew.
That's Joe Mitchell that we were speaking of within that particular operation.
That was the time that he cut that pine that he was talking
about. Oh, that same trip. That was a memorable trip in lots of ways, huh?
You're right.
Yes. It must have been to be the one that your father singled out to do the poem on. You would say it kind of started out almost a little ill-fated with the horses going through the ice.
That's right.
Yeah, quite a thing. Well, I thank you very much, Aethel. I know there's an awful lot more that you can tell me, and I may be back looking for you again.
All right.
Confirm some stuff later.
Yes.
Yeah.
Claude Cavalier told me about an experience he had on the river drive on B one time. They were driving from the deadwater on the
B. I had the log rolled into the dead water on B. Well, there's a man there by the name of George Knox. Some said that he was possessed with the devil. Whether he was or not, I don't know, but he had some kind of superhuman power. And he was doing card tricks, one thing or another, around the camp, and the boss got mad at him and fired him. So they say he was angry, I think he laughed at the way they quote. Well, he told him, he said, "You're going to be sorry you fired me." And he said, "I need this job." So he said he went out behind the hollow, took an old water boiler that was out there, and the captain pounded on that water boiler, and the captain comes out of the song. And the wind shifted and blew up that dead water, and they couldn't move a log for 3 days. And he told the boss, he said, "Until you hire me," he said, "the wind will blow up that dead water." He said, "You'll never move a log." And sure enough, he hired him back, and just as soon as he hired him back, the wind shifted and they went to die.
You believe that, ain't so?
Well, Clark told that.
We do have a book about George Knox.
And he was coming to town, this George Knox was coming to town one day with George Carpenter on a wagon, a load of potatoes. And the neck yoke broke at the top of the Armstrong Hill. And he said the wagon, they had no brake on the wagon. He said the wagon never went in ahead an inch at all. Never touched them horses, went down that hill to get on the level. And George Knox just sat there on the wagon with him.
Yeah.
And Jasper Carpenter told me about Knox, somewhere, being somewhere in the woods one time, where someone was trying to load a load of logs with his horses and he couldn't load them. He had a big log and he couldn't load. Knox come along and he said, "Well, now you take your horses and you get down on the coast road out of sight." He said, "I'll load that log for you." And he said, "I went down the road a ways," and he said, "I thought I'd watch him." He kept standing back to me, he said, "I told you to go out of sight. You stay out of sight." So he said, "I went on down around the turn." He said, "I didn't any more in the town turn." He said, "All right." He said, "She's all loaded." I went back, sure enough, he said, "It was loaded and bound to camp."
Was he a big man?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Not too big a man.
No.
I
suppose
tall
he wasn't.
And slight, I
think. Well, I suppose he wasn't, because that's why some of these things he did seem so remarkable. He
and he was helping George Carpenter farm him one summer. George Carpenter was an uncle of ours. He was helping George farm one summer, come hay and time. And it was the prettiest day that you ever saw. Pretty soon, along about 10 o'clock in the morning, George said, "That load of hay we got out there, it's 50 wind, George. You better haul it in, because it's going to be off the sun shower this afternoon, you ever saw. If you want your hay dry, you better haul it in." George said, "They went out and they loaded the load. And just got it loaded on the wagon, in which case you come to haul up a bit." About an hour, he said, "It's raining, thunder, lightning, something off." And he stepped up for 3 hours. Everybody got their hay wet. George, he's the only one with the dry hay left.
Oh, that George Knox. He must have had something. Now, I don't think the devil possessed him. I think that was a good devil.
Well, anyway, he was working in the woods, this George Knox. Claude Carpenter told me about this, too. He said that he was, there was a cook in there that was cutting some meat. He had a match. Cutting a bone, he's meat. And Knox was watching him, you know, and he threw his voice. Knox could throw his voice. And just as a man reaches his axe up to hit the meat, the meat says, "Don't you hit me, Danny." Pull a scarf, drop his axe, and run. He scared Knox. Scared his voice, he didn't know what to make of him. It was Knox standing back up in the heavens and
sure.
And he, there was a teamster around there, and started watering horses this night, and Knox was standing there watching him. And when he walked up to one horse with a pail of water, the other horse turned around to look at him, and the horse said, "Damn fool, why didn't you water me first?" The horse said to him, "Imagine the horse said
sure,
that."
Sure.
Well, that was Knox, standing back there throwing
sure.
his voice and grinning, you know.
Sure.
And then Father told me about one time he was to a dance up at Jemison on B. George Knox was there. And he said there was a man there by the name of Gov Jemison. His name was George, and everyone called him Gov. And he played a fiddle, this young kid. And he was sitting on a wooden salt box in the corner of the room playing the fiddle to this dance. And he said he stopped playing, the dance got over for the time being, and they started another dance. He said as quick as he stopped playing that fiddle, he said there was a lot of pigs started screaming in under that box. And he said, I think, he said, every woman in the house got out of there as fast as she could. They popped out from the pig. It was just Knox standing there throwing his voice at that bar. He told me about that.
Did you ever see this George Knox?
I never saw George Knox, no.
Well, he did live here.
Oh, yes. He had a camp up on V somewhere called Knox's Den. Yeah. I've heard him talk about it. And I've seen where it was. And part of it was a cave that was dug into the ground. The rest of it was a building, a small building. But they called it Knox's Den.
Sounds as if he was just a little eccentric, maybe.
Oh?
Quite clever.
He wasn't a little.
Quite clever. But he hasn't been dead a long time.
Not too long, I guess.
I don't think more than 20 years.
Oh, yes, long enough.
Oh, is it? Is it?
30 maybe. I don't think he stayed here until the time he was to his death. I think he went away from here somewhere.
Yeah.
He came from New Brunswick, I believe, somewhere. I've heard him say. I think he went back over there.
Well, whatever he was a clever fella. He certainly bamboozled everybody, didn't he?
Something there that everyone couldn't do.
Yeah.
He had some kind of superhuman power, and of course he could throw his voice.
Yeah.
But, he came to town with George Carpenter that day with the wagon, and they went ahead to hit the horse and got the neck yoke rope, and borrowed a quarter from George Carpenter. Of course, at those times, the old silver dollars were very rich. And he told George to come out there shortly after he came down. Seems as though he'd pass a quarter for a silver dollar, and then someone give him change for it. He was just in town a few minutes, and he just used a quarter for it. And then he talked for a month.
From the house of the man's death.
He'd hold a quarter up to you and make you think it was a dollar, and he'd say, change a dollar for me. He'd hold a quarter up to you, and he'd give him change for a dollar, but all you had was a quarter, and you thought it was a dollar, the way it looked to you. He'd control your mind, I suppose, in such a way that that looked like a dollar to you instead of a quarter. Silver dollar.
He really must have been quite
cool. Sharp.
Yeah.
They said he'd throw pack of cards up to the ceiling. So they'd stick on the ceiling and call them down one at a time. He'd say, Ace of Hearts, and he'd come falling down with his hand. He'd go out and put him down with his hand. So he'd have a card trick.
The men must have liked to have him in the camp.
Oh, some of them did, and others, they annoyed him, you know.
Well, yes.
There's some, and some were scared of him.
Yes. But I would think at least it would be lively. You'd know there was going to be something interesting going on.
Yeah, quite a form of entertainment, I would think.
Yes.
But I've seen men do sleight of hand performing, and you probably have too, plenty of times. Shows.
Oh, yeah.
That's what his work was, more or less, I suppose. But there's something else behind it, too.
Do you know what he did besides lumbering? Was he a performer, do you think? A real performer?
Well, he could have been at one time. I don't know.
He had to learn those tricks somewhere.
He had to learn them somewhere,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what the phenomenon was behind all this power of enchantment on that life boil and pounding it.
No.
Causing the wind to blow in any direction he wanted to.
Well, and the word he gave the man to bring in his hay before the thunderstorm, of course, there are many people who learn to read the storm signals, learn
That's
to
true,
read
yeah.
the clouds, and but to call up a 3-day wind is really pretty clever, I think, myself.
Yeah,